Pastor with Professor Leela Philip of the College of Holy Cross. Her new book is Beaverland, How One Weird Rodent Made America. The science of beavers is the science of geomorphology, effluvial geomorphology. I don't say it fast. That is watching how rivers shape the land, watching how land reacts to the river system. And we've learned from Professor Philip, and she's learned from other researchers, that a river is a complex city of the flowing water, which can be in drought or can be in flood, the wetlands, what looks like a swamp or a marsh, and the meadow that is emerging from the swamp and the marsh. The beaver manages all of that. And we go now to the White Mountains because Professor Birchstead did her work there 10 years before. And this is a 7,800-acre experimental forest that Leela Philip traveled to. The part that got my attention was sawgrass is a way of keeping people out in order for the animals to prosper. I thought, you know, we don't need to go back 100 years for Indian legends. We can make them up on our own. So what does the forest look like, Professor?
Well, what was interesting to me, and it was such a privilege to go up there with Dr. Birchstead and Dr. Bailey. I mean, these are really such committed researchers, and they've done significant work. And also, I should mention about the Hubbard Brook watershed. This is where acid rain was discovered. This is a really important, it's a long-term ecological research center. It's a tremendously important place. And so it was at this place doing watershed studies that scientists discovered that acid rain existed. And it's where they discovered the detrimental impacts of acid rain. So it would have a, you know, historically incredibly important role in the Clean Water and Clean Air Acts and the health of our environments going forward. But so I was kind of expecting to see, you know, acid rain devastated trees the way I had seen in books. And what was marvelous was to see how lush the forest was. I felt like I was walking through a rainforest at times. It was incredibly lush. In fact, what was interesting to me to go out with researchers like this is they don't need a path. They know, they just follow their GIS points. So we were just completely bushwhacking, which is hard work. So I describe that in the book. Going out with Dr. Birchstead, you have to be ready to really seriously hike. And I'm a hiker. I thought I was pretty sturdy. So I had fun describing that. But, you know, to loop back to Yale, I do want to mention something that we didn't mention, that I forgot to mention, which is that it was in the Yale forest in 1914, right near there in the Hampton Brook, that beaver were first reintroduced to Connecticut. So it's just kind of wonderful that it was all coming together, that was studying beavers in a watershed where they had been reintroduced to the state as part of the wildlife reintroduction program.
Yes,
but so anyway, back to the White Mountains.
By the end of the 18th century in New Hampshire, beavers were rare. That's how they were culled. And about culling, we've talked a little about the fur trappers. The estimate that I have here is that culling is necessary for 35% of the beavers per year. I've written that down. That's your research. And that is because their mission is to keep beavers from interfering with humans, with flooding roads. Is there an explanation for why such a large culling?
Well, I think those figures really need to be revisited with a lot of circumspect now, because there's so many different variables, one of them being climate change, which is just as hard on the animals and wildlife as it is on us. For example, this recent warm patch, the beavers were disrupted from their lodge in December because their dam was breached. That would normally be lethal for them. So those climate change is changing all those numbers, one thing. The other thing is that development has continued, and I think those numbers made sense at a certain period of time and no longer do. There are also other things happening with the warming temperatures? For example, ticks and other parasites are now an issue during the winter because it's warmer. Not so much on beavers, but other animals. So it all has to be reevaluated. But I think the main thing that I'd like to emphasize, and I think people are reevaluating. In fact, there's I just noticed that there was a letter sent to Biden out in Oregon asking him to revisit trapping on federal lands, because there's a widespread recognition that in many cases, a living beaver can add more value for their environmental contribution than a trapped beaver as a pelt, and that really needs to be reevaluated at this moment in time. And there are many non-lethal methods of managing beaver now that have been developed. So it's really case by case. I think every town, every region has to look. If your road is being flooded, do you need to trap the beaver out, or could you put in a flow device or a pound leveler and solve the problem that way? And is the benefit of having the biodiversity that the beavers bring to that pond more valuable than taking them out? You know, those are questions that need to be asked case by case. I think we didn't know to ask those questions 10 years ago.
Let's take a trip with you to the Chesapeake Bay, the Chesapeake Basin. And what you learn is that the beaver is appreciated there as well, although it's a much more populated, much denserly populated than New England, where we've been talking about New Hampshire and Connecticut. And a myth says that beavers are not good for trout. What are the facts, Professor?
Oh, well, this is really kind of exciting development in science. So for a long time, a rationale for taking out beavers and beaver dams, and it's actually still in effect in many places, is that beavers warm the water, and because trout and salmonids are cold water fish, it diminishes fish populations. But in fact, science has proved again and again, particularly out in the Northwest, but also in the Midwest, that salmon populations actually increase with beaver damming complexes. So the salmon populations go up when there are beaver dams for a number of reasons. Same with trout. So yes, salmon and trout do need areas where there's clear, fast running water, but that doesn't mean that you have to remove the beavers completely.
The chain of reforestation and re-beaverization, if there is such a word, also includes a favorite bird of mine, the great blue heron. Great blue herons depend upon the trout. So if you put beaver in and take care of them, the beavers build a dam. The dam has the pond that comes up has warm parts, but it has cool parts for the trout. And the great blue heron shows up, along with all the other wildlife. So beavers are the mothership of our woodlands and our meadows. They're creating all the conditions for all the other animals. Without beavers, we've got an environment that is distorted. We've wrecked the natural order of things, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, wildlife managers and scientists have called them a keystone species for a reason. They're like that block in a medieval arch, the keystone. You take that brick away and the arch falls. They are important for all the other species. It has been studied again and again that when you have beavers and a beaver wetland, you have 15 times more life in the water. You have 30% more wildlife on the shores, and it just goes up from there. So yes, more animal life all around.
There are not enough beavers for the Chesapeake Bay right now, so they've invented something called the BDA, the Beaver Dam Analogs. You witnessed one being put in. What is its mission? What does it look like, Professor?
Yeah, so the whole point of the Beaver Dam Analog is really fun. The theory is if you build it, they will come. So the idea is to create beaver habitat. It's a man-made dam, and they've really studied and perfected this. So they start shaping a degraded channeled out creek so that it starts to pool and bend and spread over its banks and slow down. So it creates a kind of beaver habitat. And the hope is that beavers will move in there, because in states like Maryland, it's not legal to translocate or move beaver in. Out west, they will actually relocate beaver. They'll create beaver habitat and they'll relocate beaver and set them free in those places. Maybe they'll take problem beaver from one town that are in the wrong place and take them to those beaver habitat created habitats and let them go. But the other thing that we haven't talked about is the economic value of using beavers. I mean, we need to think about beavers as millions of highly trained engineers ready to work for free. So when I was down in the Chesapeake, highly trained environmental restoration folks who build million-dollar water storage ponds would say without blinking an eye, beavers could do what they were doing in some instances for free. They could build a million-dollar water storage pond that could hold 10 acres of water, or they could just let beavers do it, and it wouldn't cost a dime. So that's real money that beavers can save townships, people, highway departments, et cetera.
Beavers also need our help because climate change is coming very fast. And when we come back, a catastrophe at a beaver dam. The professor is Leela Philip of the College of Holy Cross. The book is Beaverland, How One Weird Rodent Made America. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.